Please be seated. Christmas spending on pets has become big business. Apparently, dollar-wise, millennials lead the pack. Though at least a generation older, I also participate, and so does Santa. Tonight, he will be visiting our two dogs. Utter Joy for them is a new soft and squeaky stuffed animal, still carrying the mixed aromas of the pet store. We indulge them because we love them and because they are so entertaining to watch. We know how it will go, especially with our 10-pound Chihuahua mix. She is a literal terror with a new toy. Once she discerns by sight or smell or sound that one is in the house, she transforms into a being possessed, a four-legged laser beam of focused intensity. She must have it. Once obtained, she attacks the poor toy animal's weak point, an eye or a nose or an ear, removing it and creating a small hole. Frantically, she extracts the stuffing and enlarges the hole, thereby rooting out the squeaker. Adversary silenced, she slows down, but she doesn't quit until the newly squeakless animal is also plushless. Finally, she lies exhausted upon her conquest amid a cloud of polyester viscera. The formerly cheerful stuffed softy is now a gloomy, empty pelt, a comically two-dimensional shell of its formerly vibrant self. Dog toys aside, there is a point to all this. And it's that so many people I've spoken to recently seem to feel at least a little like an empty pelt. Like a chihuahua with a stuffed animal, life has a way of emptying us out, of reducing our dimensions, of silencing our squeak. This is the time of year when we tend to feel those effects most keenly. The days are short, and the holiday season is complicated. Even without the particularly difficult complications that some of us are managing this year. As a result, I suspect that most of us over the age of 10 have spent at least a little time recently with the melancholy-inducing ghost of Christmas past. Marley returned to warn us this was coming, but we did our best to ignore him. Lest we lose hope, it's important to remember this. Even if we sometimes feel emptied out, we are not stuffed animals animated by plastic squeakers and subject to evisceration by terrorizing chihuahuas. We are enlivened by something else, something more powerful, something more permanent. Now, in the midst of all this, the song that has been going through my head is this. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm singing it all right. I'm gonna let it shine. I'm off key. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. I'm way off key because I didn't really grow up singing that song. So it's a bit of a mystery about why it is in my head. And it's kind of annoying. It's Christmas Eve, and I could be humming any number of lovely church carols like the one we just sang, which I forced Noah to move to this part of the service so that I'd be able to sing it. I could be singing a whole bunch of lovely secular songs. Instead, I got a summer church camp sing-along, one that's actually kind of harsh when you're feeling emptied out. It kind of fits. This is the darkest time of the year, and the world needs all the light it can get, including yours and mine. But I have to admit, one of the reasons I don't really like that song is that the lyrics always feel a little false and a little forced. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. If it feels forced and false, maybe that's because for adults, the word's voice, not so much attainment as aspiration, not so much pronouncement as plea. It's a plea in two parts. One part is obvious. God, let my light shine. The second part is less obvious but more foundational. Please, God, give me certainty that I even have a light. You do have a light, you know. You have a light, even though it may not always seem so. Your light is always there. Your light can never be extinguished. Made in God's image, humans, by the fact of their creation, carry the spark of the divine. Humans must have had trouble believing that because God decided to reinforce the message. Salvation could have come by any number of paths, but God made a choice. And the choice was to effect salvation by coming to us as a fellow human being. God came to us as a fellow human being, and maybe even for God's own selfish reasons. Maybe God yearns for us the way we yearn for God. As a point of theological argument, Christianity clarified early on that Jesus was fully divine and fully human. God didn't just put on a human pelt for a while. God became a real person, and the human condition itself became holy. That fact is easy to forget. This little light of mine, I'm going to try to let it shine. Please, God, help me out. Please, God, blow on the embers and toss on some coal. Please, God, turn the glimmer into a blaze. Fortunately, every year at this time, just when we need it most, God gives us some extra help. Advent may be the season of emptying out, but Christmas is the season for filling up. If your light is a little dim right now, or if you're wondering whether you still have a light, help is on the way. Jesus is the light of the world, and tonight we pause on the cusp of his arrival. In one small corner of Cajun French country in South Louisiana, there is a unique Christmas Eve tradition said to date back to the late 19th century. Northwest of New Orleans, along the Mississippi River, people build giant bonfires atop the levees. These bonfires begin as large wooden structures. It's hard to describe them. I encourage you to go look at a picture online. I'm going to try, though. The basic design looks kind of like a pyramid, taller rather than wide, with ladders for sides. But the corners are tree trunks, big tree trunks, up to 20 feet tall, and then horizontal logs are placed between them. So it looks kind of like ladders stepped up. Again, 20 feet tall, 15 feet at the base. Some of them have fireworks inside. That part's pretty exciting. If it makes you feel any better, the fire departments in these towns are involved in managing this process. But 100 or more of these bonfire structures are concentrated in just three towns over just a few mile stretch of the Mississippi River. These folks spend countless hours assembling these structures. After dark on Christmas Eve, well, they just started a short time ago, they douse those structures with flammable hydrocarbons and set them on fire. The conflagrations are visible from miles away and take hours to burn out. They start at about 7 p.m. and they'll go past midnight. Now, like many traditions in South Louisiana, it's quite colorful and a lot over the top. It's also probably completely environmentally irresponsible, but we're not going to talk about that. Still, environmentally irresponsible or not, one might appreciate the sheer spectacle of it. One might also appreciate its purpose, which is to guide Papa Noel, Father Christmas, Santa Claus, on his way to the people of that part of Louisiana. Tonight, Jesus is coming, and we are waiting. He's coming no matter what, but a little guiding light wouldn't hurt. Besides, on that first Christmas night, God sent a multitude of heavenly hosts to make sure that at least a few people noticed that something special was taking place. It occurs to me that those bonfires are sort of like that, but in reverse. We create a spectacle so that God knows we are waiting. We're waiting in our own small way. After communion, we're going to light handheld candles and sing Silent Night. When we do that, imagine our candles as symbols of our inner lights, shining to beckon God here as God is born into the world anew tonight. We're not a bonfire, but we burn brighter together. You carry the spark of the divine. You possess the light of Christ. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.